Well, it's out, the new book that so many of you have been waiting such a long time for, Children of the Matrix by David Icke. And for you newcomers, that's spelled I-C-K-E, David Icke. How an interdimensional race has controlled the world, this world, for thousands of years, and still does. And this is a book that all Icke fans and those who have been impressed, moved, had their lives changed, influenced, impacted, altered, enhanced by David's lectures and his appearances on this and other radio shows, and his books, of course, will be, I think, amazed by. This book has it all. It's all here. This is the logical synthesis of all of David's work. I don't know how long it took you to write it, but you've got it all in here, my friend.
Hello, Jeff.
How are you?
I'm all right. It's 4:05 in the morning here, all so right. I'm just getting my head together. But, yeah,
it took a year and a half, didn't it, at least?
Yeah, well, what I've been on, Jeff, is a journey, a personal journey since about 1990, consciously.
Right.
And Children of the Matrix is really an amalgamation of all the kind of things that I've kind of learned in that time. But, of course, this book is, 500 pages, and the previous one, Biggest Secret, was 500 pages, and the previous one to that, Under the Truth to Set You Free, was 500 pages,
mm-hmm.
and still... We're probably, just at the start of really understanding how big this story is. There's so many questions I still have, endless ones. And, this is another step on the road for me, but it's nowhere near the end.
And the interesting part of this book, David, is that much of the research and the data in the book has actually been acquired by you on the road. I mean, you have picked this up from people who come up to you in the strangest places on the planet and say, David, I got to talk to you.
Yeah, well, I had some very strange experiences, Jeff, in the early 1990s when I was, very much a background very much like yours in many ways. I mean, I was a television presenter and an anchor man and and what have you. And I was minding my own business, and suddenly some amazing experiences happened to me in 1990, 1991. Extraordinary, And
so tell us,
time,
David, you have to tell us now. Give our listeners who don't know you a little bit of background on what did happen to you back then.
Well, I was presenting television programs, and I was a well-known television presenter in Britain.
Mm-hmm.
And I was also involved in the 1980s with the British Green Party, and another extraordinary story. I went from joining the party to being its national spokesman in about... Oh, in a matter of weeks. It was just mm-hmm. amazing, you have to pinch yourself.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But by the end of the 1980s, I'd seen politics for what it was, a massive part of the problem and nothing to do with the solution. And I also saw that while people like the Green Party, the leadership level anyway, talked about being different, talked about a new politics.
Uh-huh.
It was actually the old politics, in a different wrapping, really.
And I'm sure, David, like myself, working on the inside, and very successfully so, you got a chance to really understand that when the light bulb goes on as to how those fellas at the top and gals are using the mass media as their lapdog instruments of programming and torment, if you will, it's pretty disgusting.
Right. Well, you'll know, from your experience, same as me, that when you see journalism and the production of so-called news from the inside, it is quite a staggering experience. If the public could watch how the news comes to their television screen or to their newspaper, they would be staggered. I mean, journalistic investigation, investigative journalism, 99% of the time in my experience is composed of reading the morning papers and watching CNN on the newsroom television.
All right. Uh-huh.
And you're basically taking copy from news agencies and what have you that you don't know the source of it. You don't know what investigation has been done into whether it's true or not. You're just a mouthpiece. You're just a copy typist or a mouthpiece for the official version of events.
We used to call it rip and read.
Yeah, well, that's funny because I mentioned that in Children of the Matrix because when I worked for the BBC, we used to call it rip and read, and it involves someone ripping a news bulletin off a teleprinter coming from somewhere else and just sitting in front of a microphone and reading it, you know. I remember being in South Africa, Jeff, once, and I was doing this live radio interview, and I was being questioned on, how can you prove this? Well, where are your sources and all this stuff, which they seem to want from people like us, but don't seem to ask for news bulletins that are happening on the hour. So the newsreader was still in the studio who just read the kind of on-the-hour news. So I turned to her and I said, well, let's ask your newsreader the sources of the news that she's just read. And, of course, she hadn't got a clue. And this is how you become a pawn in a game of communicating information while having no idea that you're a pawn in a game. You think you're a journalist. Right. Oh, yes, I know what's going on in the world. No, you know what's going on that's just come off in the teleprinter from somewhere you don't know and from someone you've never heard of.
Exactly. One of the things I realized first was how much not only power news presenters have, alleged journalists in most cases, alleged.
Very much so.
But the responsibility, but above that there's an honor. I found it to be a great honor to be able to enjoy and have people's trusts. And to that end, I was always very careful how I read a line. You know, and you others out there who have worked in the media, how you can kick a syllable on one word and literally change the meaning or the intent of a sentence. You can play with people's minds. It's truly amazing.
Yeah, just you can. Even the way you ask a question. I mean, I'm often asked questions in mainstream radio. When the delivery is saying to the audience before I've opened my mouth, this guy's talking nonsense. He's kind of way out. He's off the planet. Doesn't know what he's talked about. You know, is he mad? And in the way the questions are delivered. So yeah, the way you do this is it can be very subtle and sometimes very obvious. And this is something that people don't realize that's going on. The way their minds are being manipulated just by the emphasis on one word or one fact.
That's right.
And so I learned all about this. And it's been, you know, when I look back at my life, it's been an extraordinary series of links in a chain where when you're experiencing them in the moment, you think this is not connected to anything else. But when you look back, you see that, you know, you've come on a journey which has led you to the way you are now. And each point on that journey has been essential to you doing what you're doing now to most effectively. And seeing the media from the inside and how it works and how you can get a vast number of journalists to advance your agenda and play your game while having no idea they're doing it is something that can be seen only if you were experienced it on the inside.
And
same with politics. I mean, I realized
it's
in politics that,
right.
You know, people who were really hurling abuse at each other in public debates and in the Houses of Parliament behind the scenes were anything but opposed to each other.
A couple of things. One, I heard a clip yesterday of someone in the Senate railing with his voice was pouring emotion and strident tones. It was all crap.
Yeah.
It's crap. It's all theater. And it's so sad that people take that seriously anymore, but they do indeed. And your other comment about how everything links together when you're able to look back at it is interesting. You and I don't know how far back we go now, but it's been quite a while, and we didn't cross by accident.
No. I mean, this is something that I've realized, and the more I travel this journey, the more I realize there is some force that is, if you like, guiding this thing. Excuse me.
Sure.
And when I've come through the last 10, 11 years, as I was saying, I was told through a psychic back in 1990, out of the blue, I met the psychic, and she suddenly started telling me these amazing things. Now, at the time, I'm presenting the sport. I'm presenting the news. You know, I'm getting on with my life. I mean, I'm questioning things. I've always questioned. I've always been a rebel, and I've always been very, very wary of authority and its agenda. But I was still just in mainstream journalism, and suddenly I bump into the psychic after some very strange things were happening in my life, and she told me that she was being told to tell me that a massive shadow that had been across the world for thousands of years had to be lifted, and a story had to be told. People had to understand what was really going on and the world they really lived in, that I was going to write 5 books in 3 years on these subjects, that I was going to go out on a world stage and eventually be world famous, putting this stuff out and exposing the reality of the world that 99% of the people had no idea was going on.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sitting there thinking, you know, God, am I off the wall or is this lady off the wall? I present the sport, you know, I mean, what are you doing? And virtually everything, if not everything, she told me in those times have actually unfolded and happened or are happening now. And after that followed a fantastic experience I had in Peru, on a mound in Peru, which basically changed my life.
Let's hear about that, David, in just a minute. We have our first little intermission coming up, and we'll be right back with David Icke. His new book, Children of the Matrix, is available now at 800-444-2524. 800-444-2524, or go to davidicke.com. It's here, Children of the Matrix, David Icke. 1-800-444-2524. This may be David's best book ever, in a long string of remarkable publications. Chapter 1, you go right into it. The title is could be the name of a book, To the Prison Born. Says it all. And there's a quote under it, "There are none so enslaved as those who falsely believe they are free. To the prison born," and indeed we are, David.
Yeah, and understanding that and understanding how the prison works has been really fundamental to me doing what I've been doing these last 10 years, because when people first hear that a few people are controlling their lives and controlling the direction of the world, they think that's impossible.
They do think it's impossible.
But actually it's very straightforward. If you control the flows of information, or what passes for information that people are receiving every day, you're conditioning their reality. And if you condition their reality, you condition their behavior.
What happened in Peru?
Well, I had a stream of very strange experiences, Jeff, back in 1990. I mean, some of them were quite bizarre, because when I was sitting in television studios, talking to television cameras, I would see sort of images around the back of the cameras. You know, there were eyes and other little images that I was seeing, and I was thinking, what's happening to me? This is really strange. Mm-hmm. And I also got the feeling that when I was in a room alone, that there was some kind of presence with me, and I didn't understand this. And then I bumped into this psychic who, not knowing anything about what was happening to me, started referring to the fact that, you know, you think there's a presence around you, don't you? Well, there is, and there's a reason for it, and the reason's going to unfold and all that stuff. And then after I had that experience in which the psychic reeled off the fact that I was going to expose what was really going on in the world, and eventually on a world stage, and I was writing these books, and mm-hmm. as one of the lines she said was, "One man cannot change the world, but one man can communicate the message that can change the world," which doesn't apply just to me. You know, the great Messiah has arrived. It applies to all of us, that line. We can all do that. And after that, I got this overwhelming feeling that I had to go to Peru, and I didn't know anything about Peru. But I had this real strong urge, and this is what kind of drives me into various situations over the years that have led me to information, this feeling, I just have to go there. And so I go to Peru, and I had this just amazing 3 weeks. I got off the plane, and a series of coincidences immediately happened to take me to Cuzco, the center of the old Inca empire. And I got put in touch with this Peruvian guide who took people to the various tourist sites and sacred sites in Peru. And I went around one morning, the first morning, to meet him, and he was asleep on the floor. And instead of saying good morning or, you know, normal greeting, he just opened his eyes and he said, "Do you have any dreams last night?" And I thought, well, that's a strange opener, you know. I said, "But actually I did. I had a real very clear technicolor dream that one of my two front teeth at the front had fallen out. And he said to me, is your father or grandfather still alive? I said, well, my father is, yeah. I said, why? He said, because that's usually symbolic of your father or grandfather dying. And I thought, well, this guy's going to be a bundler last the next 3 weeks. Anyway, you know, getting a international call out of Peru once you're outside of Lima is very difficult. But eventually I did, about 3 days later. My father had died at that time back in England. And I, every day I would say to this guy, look, I feel I've got to go here. And every day he would tell me, oh, that's not possible. And every day we'd end up there. It was quite extraordinary. And every day was the same. Eventually, he books us into this hotel at a place called Puno in towards southern Peru, not far from Lake Titicaca. And it was called the Siyustani Hotel, which was named after an Inca ruins at Inca site, about an hour, hour and a half's drive away. And pictures of this site were obviously all over the hotel.
Mm-hmm.
And I said to him, look, I've got to go there. I've got to go there. And he said, oh, it's not possible, not possible. It's not tourist season, not possible. So eventually I end up hiring this tourist bus for a lot of money with a tourist driver, and me and the guide went off to the Siyustani. And it was a beautiful place, uninhabited. There was a big hill with all the Inca ruins on the top and a lagoon on three sides, distant mountains, piercing hot Peruvian day. And all there were there was a couple of children with a llama waiting for tourists that never came because it was out of season. And I had this real strong urge I had to go there. And I went around the site for about an hour, and it was very nice. But when I got in the tourist bus to go back to Puno, I was disappointed because I thought, what I've experienced did not match the real urge I had to be here. And I'm looking out of the window as we're leaving this place, just daydreaming, and I'm looking at a mound to the side of the road, about 3 minutes down the road.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly I hear this voice in my head. And I don't get voices in my head, things like that. I just follow my instincts. But at this time, it was very clear, and it was saying, come to me, come to me, come to me. And I'm thinking, this, you know, I'm just out of television. I'm thinking, what is going on in my life? So I said to the guy, can you just stop this bus? Stop the bus. I'm going up that mound to have a look for a minute. And I was up there for about an hour and a half, it turned out, because when I climbed to the top of the mound, which seemed to be natural, but who knows, I found at the top, couldn't see it from the road, a circle of standing stones about waist high, like a mini Stonehenge, really. Obviously, been there a very, very, very long time. And I walked to the center, and suddenly I had a series of experiences that changed my life.
All right, well, hold on right there. Build a little drama and come back. You got to go where that voice tells you to go. It's amazing what you can learn if you do. Be right back with David in just a couple minutes. Once again, David's book, Children of the Matrix, is now available. Just a stunning cover on it. And what's inside the covers is, again, the synthesis, a culmination of over 10 years of David's life research. It's all here. Everything is here. If you've heard David over the years on the program, you can pick this book up, and certainly you can read all his earlier books and get something from each one that is intrinsically important, but they are all woven together in this book. That he keeps moving to a higher level of understanding of the world as his research has shown it to be. 1-800-444-2524. All right, David, you're in Peru. You've walked into this circle of sort of mini Stonehenge stones. How many stones were there, and how wide was the circle approximately?
What would it be? It would probably be about 12 feet across.
Uh-huh.
And there were stones. They were quite close together. There was quite a lot of stones, and they were all around the same height, all around waist height.
Mm-hmm.
And I walked into the center of the circle, just basically enjoying the view, and I was intrigued. Hey, there's a stone circle in the middle of nowhere.
Pretty nice.
And like I say, you know, I don't hear voices or anything like that. But at that time, that occasion, I heard two very distinct lines from wherever. One was come to me," and then came the next one. As I stood in the center of the circle, suddenly it was like two massive electromagnets were pulling my feet down to the ground, and the bottom of my feet started to burn, and I could feel a pulling towards the ground. And I felt what I now know was an energy coming up through my feet from the earth, up through my body and out the top of my head. And there was something else, like a drill in the top of my head going the other way. And out of nowhere, my arms went in the air about 45 degrees, like some, flipping sun worshiper.
Uh-huh.
And then the second line came, which was, it will be over when you feel the rain. And I'm thinking, what? First of all, where did that come from? And what are they talking about, whoever it is? Because I'm standing under, I'm telling you, a completely cloudless Peruvian sky under a piercing Peruvian sun, a big red nose to prove it. And I'm getting this, it'll be over when you feel the rain. I'm thinking I could be there a month, you know. And what was happening was that this energy was building up and building up, like some classical music getting louder and louder and louder. And you know, when you're driving a car and you think, oh crikey, where's the last 2 miles gone? Your subconscious has been driving the car.
Yeah.
It was like that. I would come in and out of a conscious feeling that, oh yeah, I'm still here.
Anybody around you, David?
Nobody. Until later, when the Peruvian guide got absolutely fed up with waiting for me down in the bus. I said it'd be a few minutes, and he came up, and I didn't even know he was there for a while because time became meaningless. There was no time in that space that I was suddenly in, and the energy coming through me got so powerful. It was like being plugged into the mains. My body was shaking, trying to hold this, and my feet wouldn't move. And after a while, I came back into sort of, if you like, consciousness and said, oh, crikey, I'm still here. And I started to look around, my body shaking, and I realized that over the distant mountains, there was a light gray mist. And that mist then started to get darker very quickly, and I thought, crikey, it's raining. And over a period of no more than 20 minutes, half an hour, this storm came out of the distant mountains very fast, and the clouds were billowing above me like dry ice on a stage show. And as this this front moved across, a very clear one, a very clear division between the blue sky and this cloud front. The sun was covered. The sun went in, and eventually the clouds were above my head, and it started to rain. And by this time, my body is shaking, literally like I've been, plugged into an electrical power socket.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And when the rain hit me, it was just like someone had flicked a switch off. Suddenly, this great flow of energy stopped, and I staggered forward. And I point out, my arms have been in the air at 45 degrees for all this period, and I haven't felt anything. The moment that this whole thing stopped, my shoulders are now agony, and my legs were like jelly. I could hardly stand up, and there's energy pouring out of my hands so much I had to grab a crystal that was down in the bus to try and take this thing out of my hands a bit. My feet were on fire for 24 hours. I couldn't sleep that night because of it. And I'm sitting there in a Peruvian hotel later, thinking, well, what on earth has happened to me, and what is happening to me? And I went into a period of about 3 months after that, when frankly I didn't even know what planet I was on. I mean, it was like a dam had burst in my mind, and so many new thoughts and understandings, concepts, insights were pouring into my conscious mind, and it was just too much to filter. I mean, it's like, you know, when you make too many presses of the keyboard in a computer, the computer says, okay, I've had enough of this, and it locks up.
And all of these things flowing into your mind, each one presented, I would assume, intrigue, mystery, a challenge. They were credible. They weren't just balderdash. They were all profound pieces of very important concepts?
Well, they were as they settled down, but as I say, that, you know, there were so many things flying through my mind.
Uh-huh.
It was like, hey, this world is not like I thought it was. Suddenly I could see things that I couldn't see before. It was like some kind of veil had been suddenly lifted from my eyes, but it was lifted so fast.
Mm.
And so many things were flowing through my mind at once. That,
yeah,
like
sensory
I say, like the computer locked up, and I really didn't know where I was for 3 months. But when that 3 months was over, and everything settled down, my goodness me, my life had changed. I could just see things that I couldn't see before. And that's when, Jeff, I started this journey of uncovering this stuff. And basically, everyone who's in our line of business of trying to make sense of the world and communicate it comes into this understanding from a different point. Some people come in because they've got an interest in, you know, UFOs, and suddenly they're thinking, well, hold on a minute, there's more to this than just UFOs, and you start getting into the bigger picture.
Right.
Some people come in for it into it from investigating the Federal Reserve and thinking, well, this is not just a scam of the Federal Reserve, this is a massive agenda, and you come in it that way. I came into it because after this experience, I started to really, really study and get, if you like, drawn to books about spirituality, about the nature of life, the nature of the multidimensional nature of the human being and reality itself. And I started to say, because I'd been a journalist, I'd been out there, I'd lived a very public life and a very, I thought, questioning life, and I thought to myself, where on earth has all this information been all my life? Why isn't this in the mainstream? Why doesn't everyone know this? And in asking that question, I started to get into the conspiracy that was not just suppressing that information, but, you know, was suppressing so much more.
Indeed, indeed. David Icke, Children of the Matrix, available now. You can go to davidicke.com, or you can call 800-444-2524. I'm Jeff Rentz. Rentz.com is the website, R-E-N-S-E. News going up around the clock for you. News you will find in many cases nowhere else. We think it is the best news service of its kind on the planet. Hope you agree. Getting about 6 million hits a month, and we thank you very much for all that. Be right back. Children of the Matrix, how an interdimensional race has controlled the world for thousands of years, and still does. The subtitle of David Icke's new book, Children of the Matrix, and it is quite a 500 pages, indeed. This information you got, David, like being hooked up to electric wires, as you put it.
Mm-hmm.
You stood there. Did you get the feeling that there was data flowing into you, or was it more of a feeling of, as you said, the veil just being lifted and you being able to see things which were there? And I know I was the same way for years. I didn't see them. They were right in my face.
Right.
But boy, when it happened, it became a cascade. And it settled in about 6 months. And I never looked back. Never looked back.
Yeah, it seems to me that it's not that humans have to seek enlightenment. We are enlightened. The fact is that we have to remove the barriers we throw up between ourselves and enlightenment.
And they have been put there to keep us from that
enlightenment. Yeah, the conditioned mind, which is conditioned to become mesmerized by this three-dimensional world. In fact, we don't live in a three-dimensional world, as I talk about in The Matrix. We live in a frequency range, that's all. We live in the frequency range accessible by our physical senses. And as a friend of mine, a physicist in Italy, has written in her books, excellent books, including one called Man's Cosmic Game, of identified matter, mass, in this universe that's been identified to exist, the human physical senses can perceive 10% or less of it. And so we're living in what we think is a world. In fact, it is a narrow band of frequency that our physical senses can access. And it seems to me, the more I research this, and every week I get this more and more confirmed to me by the people I meet and the experiences I have, this world is actually controlled by entities that operate on the outer fringes of this frequency range that our physical senses access.
Mm-hmm.
And some people who can, if you like, expand their frequency range beyond the norm can pick up and see these entities that are operating on the fringe
like,
of our vision.
Like an FM radio signal. You can look at a FM radio dial and just take out, say, 25% on each end, and we operate in that middle 50%, and just to tune up a little bit higher or a little bit lower will bring you into contact with all sorts of new information.
Absolutely right. And I think what's happening, certainly from my experience of traveling around the world, is that there is some kind of vibrational change going on that is allowing more and more people to extend that frequency range. And not only are they seeing things they didn't see before, they're also becoming open to things that very short time ago they would have laughed in your face about. I was on a mainstream radio station in America, in Washington today, and talking about, you know, really some way out things, and the way that people were not rejecting it, but were open to it and saying, "Khaki, it may sound bizarre, but this makes sense," was extraordinary and wouldn't have happened until very recently. There's something happening that's affecting the mass consciousness without any question, because I find the same thing all over the world. People are coming back to me all the time and saying, "Well, I thought you were crazy, but I'm starting to see what you mean." So it's an exciting time, as well as a time when this agenda is being pushed forward quicker and quicker.
Let's try and walk our listeners, our first-timers, we don't want to leave anybody behind, through this issue. The book, again, takes you from page one, literally, as I mentioned, the title, To the Prison Born. David shows you how the game is played, how the mechanism has been carefully crafted, and how it works so very, very well. It works so well, people can't see it. And when you point it out to most people, those who are not able to see yet, they will either laugh in your face, write you off as a friend, or punch you in the nose. It's real simple. It comes right on up to the current point of David's research with the idea that there is another race of beings here that has been here for a long time. I don't know how you want to bring people along, David. Let's give them a thumbnail ride on this. I've got a lot of questions coming in already, email. But I'd like to give you the chance to lead us through your amazing book, Children of the Matrix. So go ahead.
Well, you know, over the years, I've seen that what is actually going on is a far bigger picture than anyone thinks when they first come into it. At the level of Children of the Matrix, it literally is that one level of this story. You know, I talk about, you know, reptilian entities and other extraterrestrial and particularly other dimensional entities. But there's still so much more to know before we can fully get a grasp on exactly what is unfolding around us and the force that really is trying to manipulate us and control us within this frequency range of reality that we live in, and how they are conditioning our minds to give us a view of this reality which suits them. Mm-hmm. I mean, that movie, The Matrix, while it had lots of poetic license and various things, the basic theme of that movie, which was very successful, which is that we live in a computer-generated dream world. We're not about the computer-generated, but certainly a dream world is generated by our own minds.
Right.
And if you condition the way we perceive the reality, then we will create that reality. We're creating our own reality all the time. What this force has done has intervened in that process of us creating our reality by conditioning our vision so that we of ourselves in the world, so that we create the reality that they want us to live in. You know, because every, you know, in the end, we live in an illusion, and what we're looking at here is not going from illusion to reality. In a sense, we're making a decision at this time in our journey, or whether we're going to create an illusion that is negative, yeah, and limiting, suppressing, a prison, or whether we're going to create an illusion that is a paradise, that is free, that is the kind of world that we'd all like to live in. And we are in control of controlling the prison or the paradise, whichever one we want to create. But to do that, we have to, if we want to create the paradise, we have to take control of our minds back. We have to take control of our sense of reality back, because it's been hijacked. And it's hijacked, as we've discussed, and you know as well as anyone, it's been hijacked through the messages received through the media, through the messages we receive through education or what passes for it. All these constant messages are reinforcing daily, minute, second by second, a certain reality of this frequency range we perceive. Yeah. And in doing so, it has blueprinted our minds to generate that reality. Basically, we don't have to fight our way out of this agenda. We don't have to fight or shoot our way out of this suppression. We have to think it into non-existence and think into existence the world we'd like to create. And this is the area that my whole research is now beginning to move into, the understanding of the creation of reality and how we need to think the Illuminati out of existence and think this agenda out of existence by taking control of our minds back and stop allowing them to be conditioned so that we perceive the world in a certain way.
And all of you do remember, and I've been harping on this for 8 years now, the prime vector of this control and manipulation, the source of the illusion, is the mass media in this country, be it electronic, via television or radio. It doesn't matter. Print media, the imagery. Every time you pick up a popular magazine, People, whatever, and look at the images, the false lifestyle that you're supposed to aspire to, all those things, all the symbols, all the status, you are being programmed. TV is the most violent, ruthless, I think, manipulator, David, of them all. And the communists, of course, knew this. And I remember the communist Chinese, I guess it was 3-4 years ago, they said they had a goal of putting a television in every household in all of China by the end of the year 2000. And I believe they did it. They know. I mean, that's the number one tool because of the mesmerization. We know what television does. It puts people in a trance, and when they are in that trance, it is a deep alpha, almost a theta state. You fall into it within 90 seconds after you watch TV. You can no longer make any judgment on what's going in. It just pours right into your subconscious.
I saw a cartoon yesterday, funny enough, in a magazine, and it had the classic devil figure and the fires of hell, and this guy just arrived in hell, and there's a television set next to the devil figure, and the guy who just arrived in hell said, "Oh my goodness, I didn't realize you had a television in hell." And the devil said, "My friend, we only have television in hell." That was very
perfect.
Symbolic.
That did it. Yeah, okay. Stand by, David. We'll take our top of the hour break. You know what that means. Children of the Matrix by David Icke. That's I-C-K-E. Available 800-444-2524. You won't forget this book, and agree or disagree, it will open the doors to a lot of new areas of thought that for many of you who are not familiar with David's work will be, I think, well worth your time. Be right back with more. David Icke is back, and it is now, 9 o'clock Pacific time, 12 o'clock Eastern time, makes it 5:05 UK time.
Yeah, in the morning.
Yes.
It's starting to get lighter, Jeff, actually.
Is that a cosmic statement, or?
All right, well, I hope that's kind of symbolic of where we're going. It seems to be, but funnily enough, as it's getting lighter, there's a massive black cloud in the sky outside my window. So that's even more symbolic of where we're at, actually. The meeting of two very different realities, and the next few years are going to be very interesting as they interact with each other.
It's true. Well said, and the conflict is enormous. I've been saying it's going to get worse before it gets worse. But then, after we get past that, Children of the Matrix, David Icke's new book. All of you fans have been waiting for this, and those who you may not be fans yet, but believe me, read the book. This is something you better be careful about, though, telling people who don't want to know. And there are a lot of those out there. Only try and help people who are truly interested in taking a look around the corner at what might be coming. 1-800-444-2524. And we're sort of walking ever so briefly and lightly through just a few of the highlights of the book, which is David Icke at yet another level. Every book that David has authored has really almost been tantamount to going up a set of stairs. Each one is a little higher. And the higher you go, the better the view. And those people at the top of the pyramid certainly know that, don't they, David?
Yeah, in many ways, the further you go along the journey, the bigger the picture gets. And the more questions the more information you get, the more questions you have. But also the longer you go along the journey, in many ways the simpler it gets. And it occurred to me a long, long time ago that this structure of human control to work effectively had, in the end, to be based on very, very simple structures and very, very simple ways of operation. And the more that I've traveled this journey, the more simple the world has become in many ways, in the sense that in one of the chapters in The Matrix, I'm pointing out that while there are like pressure groups right across the world fighting and campaigning on environmental issues, on health issues, on financial issues, on media freedom issues, and what have you. In the end, what these different pressure groups need to understand while they're working in isolation is that they're all basically challenging the same force, and that those that put fluoride in drinking water, which affects the mind, suppresses our mental processes, those that put aspartame in soft drinks that has the same and other effects, those that put other food additives in the food, those that are manipulating the financial system so that we are getting into debt on money that doesn't exist, those that are decimating the ecology of the planet, what have you. All these different apparently unconnected issues are being orchestrated basically by the same force, and it's in understanding that that the world gets simpler, and what's happening in the world gets simpler. There was a documentary, a very, very good one, actually, on the level that it operated in on British television about a couple of weeks ago by an Australian journalist called John Pilger, I have great respect for. And it was about globalization. It was asking the question, what is this globalization that all these people are protesting about? And there were some remarkable statistics in there in terms of the way globalization manipulates and exploits people. One I remember was that Tiger Woods, the American golfer, is paid more per year by Nike to promote their products than virtually the entire workforce of Indonesia is paid to make those products in the sweatshops. And he was pointing out now that 200 corporations are now responsible for a quarter of the world's economic activity. Now, and a lot of the people on what they term the left in politics, in which Pilger is very much part of that, have now reached this level, as we've seen with the protests at the various summits around the world, with the orchestrated violence by the very authorities that are condemning it, incidentally. And they've reached the point where they can see that globalization is actually not a good thing, to say the least. What they need to do is to go to the next level and start to see that those 200 corporations, which are responsible for a quarter of the world's economic activity, if you go high enough, are basically one corporation. And that's the next level that I think people need to go at in understanding the world, because it becomes much simpler. You know, Pilger was exposing how there is this coordinated push to centralization of everything and control by corporation. What we need to understand to get beyond that is that this is not some kind of accidental coordinated action where everyone starts to think, yeah, this is what we're going to do sort of together, but in an unconnected way. It's just a coincidence. This is a force that is coordinating this move to centralization on a global level, and it's been doing it for a very, very long time. But at least what we call the left in politics has now begun to appreciate this globalization situation. And of course, you know, people like you, me, and so many others around the world and in the past before we got involved in this have been pointing out that this globalization is the agenda. Because if there are a few of you and you want to manipulate a very large number of people, then you have to centralize decision making. There's no other way of doing it. The more points of decision making there are, the less power you're going to have, because you can't control all these different points of decision making. So there's been this incessant, and you know, in my research anyway, it doesn't go back years, it goes back thousands of years, of centralizing power on the planet. We've moved from the tribal situation into nations. From nations, we're now moving into the superstates of Europe, and of course, the summit of the Americas a few months ago with Bush there agreed that the creation of this whole of the Americas free trade zone, which of course is designed to evolve into the Americas version of the European Union with centralized decision making and dictatorship by bureaucrat to the whole of the Americas, as we are having here, the basically the whole of Europe. And this is an incessant movement to centralization of power, because that is the essential structure to give the power of the few over the mass of the people. And of course, the more you centralize power, the more power you have to further centralize power, which is why centralization is getting faster and faster and faster and faster, the more that these various structures are put in place to give the few more and more power to dictate to the many.
There was a major effort toward globalization in the 19th century. We've referred to it as the British Empire. How do you look back and factor the great days, the heydays, the salad days of the British Empire into all this?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there are people here who still go misty-eyed over the great British Empire.
I imagine.
You know, I mean, you know, I go misty-eyed also, and I, you know, but mine are tears of sorrow, you know. Because the British Empire and the British in general, it's important, I think, to make the distinction between the British and those that have controlled Britain, because Britain is one of the great Illuminati centers on the planet, certainly at operational level. The City of London is big time one of the centers of operation, has been for a very, very long time. And the British Empire was basically the Illuminati Empire, because the Illuminati was operating out of Britain. If they'd have centered their operation somewhere else, it would have been the great something else empire. And what I think people have missed is that when these European empires, particularly the British, started to apparently contract on the surface, it wasn't actually withdrawing power over the countries that were the former colonies. It was exchanging one form of power for a very much more effective one.
Insidious,
When you had the empires, you had in-your-face dictatorship. Everyone knew in America and in Africa and in Australia and Asia that the British were in control. They knew where they stood. They were in a overt dictatorship. Now, those always have a finite life, because when you know you're in a dictatorship and you know you're controlled, you have something to target on. You know who's controlling you, and eventually there will be a rebellion against that. What happened with these empires, particularly the British, is that when they apparently contracted and pulled out of the colonies, they left behind in those countries, including perhaps especially America, the bloodlines that the Illuminati, that is the Illuminati if you go high enough, and the secret society network through which those bloodlines manipulate. And they've continued to control those countries ever since, but in a hidden hand fashion. And that's the most effective form of control, a control that people can't see. And if you can persuade people that they live in freedom and democracy, and you equate democracy with having a vote every 4 years for two masks of the same face, and you equate democracy with freedom, then if you're in a country where you have a vote every 4 or 5 years for to elect another dictatorship, then you're in a free country. And when you put those things together, you persuade people that they're free, when actually their lives are being fundamentally controlled. But people don't rebel against not being free when they are convinced they are.
Oh,
and so
time,
many people in America, the land of the free, are absolutely convinced they live in the freest country in the world. Yep. When I first came into America to really travel research there in 1996, when we first met, of course, in Santa Barbara, I was staggered coming in as an outsider at what a controlled country America was. Canada, too. I think Canada, from my experience, is even worse. And so the colonial empire and the end of that was a move from in-your-face dictatorship to the much more effective covert dictatorship, which can only be removed when people realize it exists.
It's true. Be right back with David Eichler to talk a little bit about Tavistock. What is that, you say? Stay tuned and you will find out. In every apparatus for control, there is a mechanism, a computer brain, if you will. Something has to direct it. Something has to perfect the programs. Something has to socially engineer illusion. And the word Tavistock is key to understanding that. This has been around. Tavistock's been at it, I guess, close to 100 years now, hasn't it, David?
Well, it kind of began to emerge in the 1920s, but how long it was operating covertly before that, who knows. But Tavistock is a key part of a global network which has researched, and some of its research has been grotesque in its research of individuals, and I think MK Ultra, the mind control operation in America, which has very much come to light, even in mm-hmm. elements of the mainstream media over the years, mm-hmm. was very much a part of this network that is now a global in its expression, where they are looking at how the mind individually and collectively reacts to certain stimuli, and working out what stimuli are needed to be put in for the mind to react in the desired fashion. And we are being given the stimuli all the time. And the more, of course, it moves on, the more sophisticated it gets. And it's about, you know, what do we have to put out to get back from people the reaction we require. And Tavistock has been at it for a very, very long time. And when you look at its history, it basically, or more than basically, came out of British intelligence. It came out of that whole intelligence arena in Britain, which is very, very much part of this Illuminati satanic network that manipulates the planet. And it's still going strong today. And the Stanford Institute in America is part of the Tavistock network. And in all the individual countries, you have the subcontracted networks which carry out the Tavistock agenda of conditioning the human mind, particularly the collective human mind, and how to manipulate what we call public opinion, which is just the reaction of the collective consciousness of a country or a world. Hmm.
The great American political charade, or charade, as some of your countrymen say, continues at full tilt. It must be from abroad a circus, a sideshow, a tawdry display of graft and corruption, the likes of which I don't know that you'd find anywhere else on the planet, at least not as visible as this one. It's got to look pretty absurd from over there, no?
Well, I think the thing about America that people have missed is that it is a front. The real power is in Europe, and the real major global corruption is orchestrated from Europe. Mm-hmm. The thing is that I find, which is why I love coming to America to research, is that the sophistication of the suppression and secrecy in places like Britain is far more effective, because basically it's an older society in terms of the society that we see today. Of course, the Native Americans go back a very, very long way. Mm-hmm. But in terms of the society we see today, it's a new society-ish. In Britain and Europe, they have been doing this for so long that they're much kind of better at it. And so in America, things come out, hallelujah, and we're able to see things there that are much better suppressed in Europe. There is unbelievable corruption in British politics. But, yeah. You know, if anything, the Europe is far more asleep to what's going on in the world in terms of these subjects we're talking about, but then the American population are, because of programs like yours. I mean, this is the best radio program on these subjects on the planet without any question by a mile. We don't have things like this in this country. We don't have radio programs that focus on what your program talks about. We just have the mainstream media, basically, which dominate the airwaves. So America is much more aware of so many things that Europe isn't, and in that way, more things can come out. But you know, what goes on in America goes on in Europe also.
Sure. Yeah, I want to say one quick thing, David, as we go to a break here. I get a lot of email from your countrymen, and it seems to me that you're 100% right, of course, about the suppression and control in Britain. But I think many of the British realize that, do they not? Do they not see it and understand that they are not free, they are not allowed unfettered information?
There are people who would communicate with you, Jeff, that are becoming aware of that, absolutely. I mean, you know, there are people who are waking up to this, but the general population is absolutely comatose on this.
Still switched off, huh?
Yeah, but of course, as in America and as in other countries, the veil is lifting and more people are waking up to this, but the mass of the population are still asleep. What I find interesting, however, and it's the same in Britain as in America, the last general election in Britain, there was a massive percentage of people did not vote, and that's a good sign.
That is a good sign. Stand by. We'll take a break. Come right back with David Icke, his new book, Children of the Matrix, now available. 800-444-2524. Children of the Matrix is available now. Again, 1-800-444-2524. 500 pages of truly amazing information. The idea that there is another race of beings here, and in fact, who knows how many, but one that has been pulling strings on all sorts of levels for a long time, is so foreign to people that many people wouldn't be able to tolerate the concept. But again, there are those who are waking up and who will take a listen. And to all of you, I would suggest do avail yourselves of this opportunity. This is remarkable stuff to consider, and you'll have to make your own decisions, but by all means, take a look and read it. This group that is here, David, what do we know about them? Besides, we call them reptilians. What have you come to be able to put together? And I do remember the program so clearly, and always will, that you were kind enough to arrange live from South Africa with Credo Mutwa.
Mm-hmm.
Remarkable how the universal message of this darkness is literally all around the planet. But who are these people and what do we know about them?
Well, again, I have kind of a war and peace of questions myself. About this whole subject. But it's very clear that ancient and modern experience is remarkable in the sense that they support each other. If you look at accounts of the ancient world all over the planet, and again, you mentioned Credo Mutwa, who's picked up phenomenal knowledge from, nearly 80 years now as a most of that 80 years as a person who's been initiated into knowledge of ancient Africa and in the shamanistic stream of Africa, and there are very few people have that knowledge because when the Cecil Rhodes-led Europeans arrived, Illuminati in other words, and very much connected to the Rothschilds with Cecil Rhodes, into Africa, in the words of Credo, they milked the minds of the shaman and then killed them. The African people who had this knowledge then had to create underground networks to pass it on to those that they could trust. And Credo Mutwa has been initiated into most of this knowledge over his life. And as you say, it's remarkable that what I uncovered through people's experience in America and Europe and other parts of the world, I met this big black man in Africa, and he was telling me exactly the same stuff, and we've become great friends, not least because he has seen that at last some of the knowledge that he's had through initiation in Africa is actually coming out in other parts of the world now. Mm-hmm. And this basic common theme is of a interbreeding in the far, far ancient world. Goodness knows how long ago it actually started, between a reptilian race of some kind. And again, you know, this reptilian level of it is only one level of it. You know, it's not the reptilians any more than it's the Freemasons or the anything. There's many, many levels of this, but at this level we're looking at the moment, there seems to be a very, very serious reptilian expression and dimension to this, and that this reptilian race interbred with humans to create a hybrid race, a hybrid bloodline, which they placed in the positions of ancient ruling royal power. And this, in my experience anyway, is where we get this ancient idea of the divine right to rule. The divine right to rule because of what? Because of your DNA, because of your bloodline. We just across the water, I live on a little island just off the south coast of England. About an hour and a half travel from here is a lady sitting in Buckingham Palace, or wherever she is now, who is the Queen of England only because of her bloodline. And Prince Charles, if he does succeed her eventually, will go into the monarchy or become king of this country purely because of his bloodline. Now, this was the case, obviously, in the ancient world. And why? What was the obsession with genetics? What was the obsession with interbreeding with these families? This was the question I was looking to answer many years ago as I started looking at this aspect of it. And when you follow these bloodlines through from the ancient world, they became the aristocracy of Europe, the royal families of Europe. And as we've talked about, when the European empires, not least the British Empire, expanded all over the world, those bloodlines went with it. And when these colonial powers apparently withdrew on the surface, as I said earlier, the bloodlines were left out there. And those bloodlines today express themselves as presidents of the United States, like George W. Bush, like his father, like Franklin Roosevelt. They express themselves as the banking leaders, as the media owners. And so what we're looking at is this hybrid race, these demigods, as they were called in the ancient world, these middlemen between the gods, whatever finally we understand that actually means, mm-hmm. and humans, have actually been in the positions of power and expanding that power for literally thousands of years. And what it seems to me, Jeff, is that the real point of control, the real center of power, is not in this frequency range we call this world, this physical world. It's actually in other frequencies very close to this one, like I said earlier, on the edge of our physical senses reality. Mm-hmm. And these particular bloodlines have a vibrational resonance which allows particular entities in these other frequencies to possess and work through those bodies, almost like putting on a spacesuit. And therefore, if they can put these particular bloodlines, the physical body in effect, into positions of power, they are putting these themselves, these other dimensional entities, into those positions of power. So in our frequency range, we see an apparently human body. And we think George Bush is human, this person's human, that person's human. But what is actually controlling that body? What is calling the shots in that body? And the more that I've researched, and I've actually had some experiences looking into the eyes of some of these guys, even before I began to understand some of this stuff, which actually blew me away. It was like when you look into the eyes of some of these guys, it's like looking into infinity. When you look into a person's eyes normally, you're making a point of contact at the point where their eyes are.
Right.
With these guys, in my experience, you look beyond that,
yeah.
And it's like looking into a black hole. And
it's a real bottomless pit kind of a feeling. I've noticed that myself with some people. Very
yeah.
scary
I mean,
stuff.
It's this possession of physical bodies in positions of power that's the key, I think.
Well. Children of the Matrix, it's all in the book, how an interdimensional race has controlled the world for thousands of years, and still does. David Icke is the author, that's Icke, and we shall continue our last segment already. Amazing how time flies when David's on the program. Be right back. All right, we're back, and again, the phone number for David Icke's newest and most amazing book, 800-444-2524. Here, let's do a couple of email questions, David, real quickly, if we can here. Some people have been kind enough to send them in. They've been waiting for a long time. So let's see if we can take care of a couple of those. Robert Mann sent this in. He says, Jeff, this week, and here we go back to the mass media. Robert Mann picked up a copy of People magazine. Shame on you, Robert. At any rate, he said, I'm sure he was just studying it. This week, People magazine did a puff piece on Prince William and Prince Henry. We were just talking about the royal family. Please ask,
Prince Harry, yeah.
Yeah. Please ask David, did I say Henry?
Yeah.
Gee, Henry VIII. Please ask David what they are really being trained to do, and do they really believe their mother's death was an accident? Robert Mann. Thank you for the question, Robert.
Well, whether they think their mother's death was an accident, I don't know. But and I can only talk about what's happening to them on the basis of the research I've done and people very close to the royal family and this whole scene that has happened to previous people. And this mind control of the population and the individual mind control that we've seen in projects like MK Ultra, these bloodlines actually do to their own children, because it's interesting when you look at the reptilian mind and the official scientific analysis of the reptilian part of the brain, of course, which we all have. The traits of the reptilian brain, a desire for power over others, an obsession with top-down hierarchical structures of power, an obsession with ritualistic behavior, are all the kind of classic traits that you find in people that operate at any level of significance in the Illuminati.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the traits that I've identified among these hybrid bloodlines is they are completely obsessed with taking out any chance out of a situation. This is why they work through both sides in a debate or both sides in a campaign of some kind. It's because by controlling both sides, they can be sure of the outcome before the whole thing's even started. They have a problem with unpredictability. They have a real problem with maverick people who are not predictable, people that don't conform to the mold. This is why they're, again, so obsessed with trying to manipulate the human mind collectively so that it reacts in a predictable way. They are really completely lost when it comes to maverick behavior and unpredictability. Therefore, they don't want their children to be unpredictable either. So they inflict forms of mind control from the start, sometimes through various rituals, apparently, actually in the womb, so that they can dictate the children's behavior. So no cuckoos in the nest are going to come through.
Mm-hmm.
So the royal family of Britain, being a very significant, not top of the pyramid by any means, but a significant bloodline, they put through their children through tremendous mind conditioning and mind control techniques so that they become predictable,
right,
and people who will work for the agenda in the way that's required. Now, the situation with Diana, with the two boys, was that she was trying to get them to think in a different way. I mean, there were many reasons why they wanted Diana out of the way, some of them ritualistic and some of them because of the problems she was causing for them. And one of those problems was that she was giving the two boys, and of course William is in line to become king after Charles. In fact, some people say even before then. She was giving those two boys another reality, another view of life that the royal conditioning was not giving them. And since she died, of course, the royal family have had complete control of those two boys.
Mm-hmm.
And goodness knows what has been happening to them in terms of the manipulation of their minds. And even if they thought that their mother's death wasn't an accident when it happened, because of this work that's done on them, and always is, and some of it's horrific, I doubt if they believe it now.
Yeah, well, good point. No surprises, please. That's the agenda.
It really is.
Keep it all the same. Here's from Doug McIntosh. Jeff, what good does all this knowledge do me if I can't change the system? Do I kill these strange people, pray for them, or just ignore them?
Right. Just to very, very quickly, one thing I meant to mention about Prince William is that he was born on the summer solstice. And what Diana was told was that she was being induced to keep the birth in line with Prince Charles's polo playing program. What she was being induced for was to have that boy born on the summer solstice, which in the obsessed ritualistic nature of the Illuminati and these bloodlines absolutely falls with the pattern. In terms of what we can do, well, first of all, do we kill these people? Well, I can only talk from my point of view, and that is that if we think we're going to meet violence with violence, if we think we're going to meet horrific behavior with horrific behavior, then what we're going to have is twice the horrific behavior and twice the violence. For me, we need to remove the cause of the problem. The cause of the problem is that we are allowing our reality to be indoctrinated into us, and more than that, each generation, each indoctrinated generation, is then playing its unknowing part as mind controllers and indoctrinators of the next generation, not least parents to children. And what we need to do, and we've talked about this on this program before, we need to take control of our minds back. And we can't heal the world until we heal ourselves, because we are the world collectively.
Yeah. Amen.
The world is an expression of our collective state of being, our collective state of reality. We need to change ourselves so we set ourselves free. That's all we can do, first of all. Set ourselves free as much as we can from this indoctrinated reality and start to see through it. And start then to communicate this so that more and more people start to awaken. This is I hate to use the word battle because it has connotations, and I don't like the word battle or fight. You know, what you fight, you inevitably become, which is why you find two sides in a fight using the same methods and the same behavior.
How about struggle?
The struggle. I mean, you know, but people know what I'm trying to say. I'm not setting this up as a war or a battle, but if you like, the land on which this struggle is taking place, the point of this struggle is a struggle of information. These guys do nothing unless it's necessary. There's no surplus fat in this agenda and its unfolding methods. They do things because they are necessary. And so the key thing, and we talked about this and referred to it many times tonight, is the media. It's information. The reason that they have got such control of information is because without it, their agenda is finished. So what we need to do is to communicate alternative information. And we can all do this, you know, just talking to your neighbor, just talking to the people at work, not imposing it upon them and telling them what they should think, but pointing out, having the courage to say things that initially people might say, hey, it's a bit strange. Have you gone mad? What's the matter with you? But keep saying it, because it's one of the things I keep saying to people, you cannot unhear something. And while the conscious level of someone may say, hey, that's strange or mad, the subconscious is stimulated by it, because at that deep level of ourselves, we know this stuff already. It's that this conscious mind conditioning is suppressing that so that we don't consciously become aware of it. We need to communicate. Information is the key. Not guns, not killing anybody, not hatred. Love it in its true sense. And love has got this connotation of being weak and, oh, he's into love and he's a bloke. He'll be doing the washing up next. Oh, my goodness. When really love in its true form, not I love you because I fancy you, darling, saw you down the disco, but love in its true form, unconditional love, love for people who are doing horrendous things, is the ultimate power, because that kind of love is without fear for a start, and it will always speak its truth no matter what the consequences. And it will always do what it believes to be right. And therefore, if we can get to that level where we speak our truth openly all the time without fear of the consequences, suddenly the floodgates open to the flow of these alternative ideas and this alternative information, this alternative documentation of what's happening in the world. We start to get that out into the flow of society. But at the moment, so many people who have begun to understand some of what's going on still keep it to themselves or in their little circle because they are terrified of the consequences for them of people's reactions if they start talking about it and circulating it. So setting ourselves free is the first key so that we can become another voice in this increasingly expanding flow of information that is challenging the conditioned view of reality.
And brilliantly put together in David's new book, Children of the Matrix, 1-800-444-2524, or go to davidicke, that's ICKE.com. David, great to talk with you.
You too, Jeff.
Take good care.
Thanks, mate.
Okay, good night. All right, there's our latest conversation with David, which goes back 6 years now. A lot of them in the archives for you, too. All right, that's our program tonight. We're going to take 21 hours off the air.